You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
We're not Madrid, and we're also not playing our football in the Premier League next season. Gents, you're listening to the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio with me and Guy Barlow, George Singer, and of course Cameron Ramsey of Fulhamish. And it's the first time I've seen you since the relegation was mathematically confirmed. How are you all feeling?
Glorious.
Fantastic, yeah. Yep.
It's a party.
It was a party.
So why are you feeling so good? Is this a sense of sort of inevitability being lifted?
Relegation's been looming for some time now, and it's like a monkey off your back in a sense, really. So, yeah, I mean, for me, I just feel totally, totally lifted and relieved and just happy. Just happy with the rest of the lads, just happy.
They say it's the hope that kills you, so now the hope is gone.
Oh, George.
That sounds really sad, doesn't it?
The morbid boy.
Well, it's in the bit that you always think, oh, and even there was a moment when we equalised against Watford and I was like, oh, maybe we can get that win. Maybe we can do something.
Stop scoring.
So it's that horrible little hope inside. But no, it's good. I'm looking forward to the championship. Can't wait. Mm.
Yeah, the manner of it was, epitomised our season as well. Equalising, playing well in patches, and conceding 3 goals in 12 minutes. And, yeah, going out with a whimper.
Yeah. Summed up our season perfectly. Defending was awful.
Capitulation. Awful. Yeah.
But again, glad it's over.
Well, it's not over yet. There is still some Premier League football to be played.
Pass.
Were you...
As long as we take Cardiff down, that's all I care about.
Pre-season, basically. Yeah. That's what we've got to treat it like.
So with that in mind, I was asked a very interesting question on the Drive show on Love Sport with Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's earlier. They were saying, for Fulham, is it now a case of, you know, trying to go down with some pride, playing the strongest team available, trying to get some results, possibly, as you say, take Cardiff down with you? Yeah. Or is there an element of treating it, as you say, as a pre-season for pre-season, looking ahead to the championship, thinking, well, who's still going to be at the club? Who do we need to keep? Who do we need to get rid of? Where should we strengthen? And is there a case for blooding some youngsters as well?
Yeah, definitely blooding a few youngsters. I always wanted to see O'Reilly sort of make a little bit of an appearance in the first team, but I think pride and dignity is kind of gone. I mean, relegation doesn't seem so bad in my eyes this time round, because it was always there, and it's like you say, it's an inevitability. But you're going to give the fans a little bit of joy in the next couple of games, at least go out there and score a golden 8-1 loss at, you know, something like that, Everton at the weekend or Bournemouth away. Give us something.
I think priority one is pick up Andre Schürrle in a car, drive to Dortmund and drop him off, probably.
I've got that car.
Yep. Yeah.
Will you be driving him yourself?
I will, yeah.
We will carry him back to Dortmund, I think. I think it's all about thinking going forward. You know, players like Schürrle, they're not going to be in the squad next season. We do have to think about going forward. What kind of team do we want to start to build? How do we want to play going forward? You know, this is Parker's time to try and build the team that he wants to use next season. And if there's players like Schürrle who are taking the position of someone like O'Reilly or someone, obviously players like Fosse are coming back from injury as well. I think, you know, I don't think starting them is the right thing to do, but Schürrle's come off the bench a few times. Why don't we stick a few of the youngsters on the bench, bring them into the matchday squad, and, you know, give him a bit of experience ready for next year.
He's literally been a passenger, you know, so why not throw him in the car and just take him home?
He's been a passenger. He's been a passenger, of course, with Champions League experience. There is Champions League football going on at the moment. Throughout the show, we'll be bringing you updates from Ajax versus Juventus. It's still 0-0 in Holland, and United versus Barcelona. Barcelona lead United 1-0 at Old Trafford. That's not the only football that's going on at the moment, because there's championship games going on. And if we look at some of the results that are currently going on in front of us in that league, plucky little Wigan 1-0 up away at Hull, looking to stay up. Reading 1-0 up against the league leaders in Norwich. Rotherham 1-0 up against Aston Villa. This is a fantastic league in which anyone can beat anyone. The games come thick and fast. You're very unlikely to have any Liverpool fans in the home end. Are you looking forward to championship football?
Yeah, there are definitely positives to going down. I think the one that I always think about is mainly just the lack of coverage, but you get less coverage, but you get more specific and more detailed and better coverage when you do get it. So now that we're part of this Premier League, we've got these random array of pundits who have watched maybe one Fulham game this season, probably against someone big like Man City or Chelsea, who don't know what we're actually about, and then they drop them in these Match of the Day or, you know, Sky panels, and they're expected to talk about Fulham and they don't know anything. But next year, wherever we're watching this analysis, we've got people who actually know about us. And that's something that I actually like about the Championship, even though sometimes you feel we don't get the recognition we should, particularly when we're on our 23-game unbeaten run, things like that. Sometimes that's not picked up by the mainstream press when it should be.
Yeah.
But I mean, Luton are 28 games unbeaten at the moment. But anyway, so that's something I'm looking forward to, just more specific and better coverage.
Talking of coverage of Fulham, there was an article written about Fulham on Vice, which has gone up in the last day or so, with the headline, "Why Fulham FC Are the Essence of Schadenfreude," talking about how we as British people like to take pleasure in the pain and suffering of others, particularly when they've spent a lot of money. There are some sensational quotes in this article, one which was cited by Fulhamish yourselves on Twitter. "They're box office bad, a firework going off in a dog poo bin kind of team." It's not polite. There was another suggestion that a certain Mr. Dennis Adoy at the back has been playing as if Mr. Blobby is mayor of his brain, which is
such a good line.
Slander of the highest order. Is that what you think Fulham are about? Is the role you've played in the Premier League this season one of, you know, a vehicle for Schadenfreude, as whipping boys, as, you know, rumours about Abdoulaye Kamara getting in a fight during yoga? Is all of that just, you're sort of a banter team?
It's been a comedy of errors, hasn't it, on every single front? And those quotes are absolutely fantastic, but I wouldn't disagree with any of them at all. You know, we have been a bit of a laughing stock. We've been one of those punch bags just to be pummeled throughout this season. And you know, the Premier League needs them, and you can only be happy at the fact that we've actually been those this season to give people a little bit of joy, even if it's our own expense, really.
Yeah. I don't have many problems with that. I think that's quite funny. I think, like, at the end of the day, football is entertainment. That's why we watch it, because it's fun and it's more enjoyable. And, like, if I had to compare, you know, would I rather be a Fulham fan who every so often gets relegated, gets promoted, spend 100 million, get relegated immediately, have fights whilst doing yoga, go to Wembley, or be Everton, who in a good year would get seventh?
And well, they're looking good this seventh. Year. They're, of course, next for Fulham. We'll be talking to various different Everton journalists looking ahead to that fixture. I've decided that my favourite line, by the way, from this article is, "The illicit thrill of seeing Fulham's entire defence performing as if chained to invisible radiators." Do you think that's fair?
I read the article, yeah. I think it's quite funny. I don't know. The writer's not a Fulham fan, so I think it might be funnier if it was a Fulham fan, you know.
You feel personally attacked by this guy?
No, not at all. I don't know. Like, I'm not sure. You know, our purpose in the Premier League is not to be a laughingstock. We went in there to, you know, become a Premier League team. Like, we're not a joke completely. We've done some very funny things, which you can laugh at, but our whole existence is not a joke for other Premier League teams to laugh at.
But the defence has been playing like it's been tethered to a helter-skelter, not, you know, let alone a radiator. It's just been a spiral.
Yeah, and that's really funny. I agree. But
thanks,
in and of itself, but we're not a joke.
Well, with that in mind, are you looking forward to the shoe being on the other foot and you going down a division, but then being the big dogs again, seeing the likes of Ryan Sessegnon operating the way we saw him operate last season, being a team people are genuinely afraid of rather than chuckling at?
I kind of think it's how it reacts to, you know, the dire results we've had this season. You know, it's not an easy division, the Championship, by any stretch of the imagination. And as you've already stated, any team can go out on their day and beat, you know, the table toppers. So it's a cutthroat division and we've got to be ready for that. But I'll be interested to see how we react, more or less.
Yeah, I think it's one of those you can't underestimate the league. Like we did it when we went down, we thought, if we have, you know, a team full of amateurs around Brian Ruiz and Hugo Rodallega, that would get us up. It didn't. You've had loads of other teams. You've had Aston Villa try and buy their way out of the league. You've had, you know, Stoke do the same thing this season and really struggle. You know, you can't underestimate the league. It's going to be tough. And if you go down, assuming you're going to walk it, and the players assume it as well, they're going to quickly work out that's not really how it works in the Championship.
Absolutely, a tough division and one that Fulham will, of course, already be thinking about how to prepare for. Coming up, we'll be talking about the Premier League, still, for the next few weeks at least, looking at how Scott Parker got it wrong tactically at Watford.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio, and it's time for a full post-mortem of the Watford game. But first of all, Champions League action. It is still Barcelona 1, Manchester United 0 at Old Trafford, and Ajax 0, Juventus 0 in Holland. How do you guys look at these fixtures? Do you see a potential Champions League winner in action tonight?
Well, to me, City's the one that I've been keeping an eye on. I think I'm probably alone here. I'd love for them to win the quadruple.
No, why?
Leicester City, or, you know, what City are we talking about here?
Oh, Man City,
yeah.
Yeah. The City in the Champions League.
They don't have license to that name. I will call people out on that, because there are loads of cities. Like just because they're big now doesn't mean that you get to call them City.
They're the citizens, you know, Man City, aren't they?
No, I don't know. I don't like them. I don't like many teams in football, let's be honest.
Yeah. I think it's City or Barcelona for me. I still think...
Even after that City result last night?
Man City.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Hang on, I'm not being found guilty of this. They are the biggest city in the country in a non-geographic or population sense, and therefore I will call them City.
Yeah. I'd still call them favourites. I think... I didn't see the game. But from all I've read and heard, they looked pretty good. They looked pretty dominant. Son's goal was Edison could have done a lot better with it.
He was gifted a lot of time in the box, wasn't he, really?
He was. And you're always going to get a bit of a boost in the new stadium, which looks wicked, by the way. It looks really, really good, that new stadium. If I was a betting man, I'd still put my money on City.
Bold. City. Cameron, what do you reckon?
I'm sort of teetering between City and Barca. But, you know, I'm going to go for Barcelona, actually. I can't not deny that.
Guy, Leicester City, Norwich City, who
Birmingham.
Are you backing?
I don't care about the Champions League.
Okay, well, that was quick.
Exeter City it is.
Exeter City it is, absolutely. Turning our attentions back to Fulham's last game and that pretty terrible capitulation against Watford. Parker got it wrong, I think, inarguably. But where do you think those errors were?
So, from my point of view, I think if you're preparing for Watford, how they've played throughout the whole season is this kind of 4-4-2 kind of thing, with the wingers pushing up quite centrally, so it's almost like a 4-2-2. And in that case, it kind of makes sense. I'm not the biggest fan of the back three or the back five. It kind of makes sense. If you're trying to shackle a Deeney and an Andre Gray, it might make sense to have an extra guy there who can kind of, you know, really grab them and stop them dominating up front. When Watford came out with a kind of 4-2-3-1 and De La Feu kind of dropping back a bit, again, like as we saw at Man City, you've got three central defenders against one striker. And Deeney, you know, Deeney can outmuscle any of them. Le Marchand had a really tough game, and Deeney had him on toast, basically, didn't he? And then you've got two centre backs not doing anything, And in midfield, you've got Anguissa and Kearney, who have no bite to them at all. So we got overrun by Watford in midfield. And I thought we battled okay in the first half. But as soon as Watford knew what they were doing, made those two half-time subs, switched it up and made the most of our lack of control in midfield, they absolutely dominated and we just collapsed in the second half.
We've got a quick update from the Champions League. It is Juventus 1, Ajax 0. It's a massive away goal. It's a sigh from Guy Barlow of Fulhamish. Who else could it be? A certain Mr. Cristiano Ronaldo on the stroke of half-time, scoring a massive goal for the Turin side. Guy, you seem devastated by that.
I'm half joking when I say I don't care about the Champions League. I hate Juventus. And I work very closely with a Juventus fan. So this is really annoying.
So why do you hate Juventus, beyond the fact that you work with a Juventus fan?
They got done for cheating years ago.
You know what? Fair enough. Yeah. Okay.
And their handling of the Cristiano Ronaldo situation is awful.
Yeah, I agree with that. Absolutely. Really, really poor. But they are winning. And that, I suppose, is the reality of football. Where else did it go wrong for Parker? Because the defence wasn't at its strongest, but equally lacking a bit of cutting edge going forwards.
I'd say so. And when you try and play Kearney in that midfield too, when he can't defend to save his life, because his mind clearly doesn't work like that. He doesn't think about ever putting in a tackle. But because he's in that midfield too, he doesn't have the freedom to push up. If he was in midfield three, he would have the freedom to push up. So quite often you had the front three who I think actually played pretty well. Mitrovic had a good few chances, didn't put on his finishing boots in the morning. But Sess and Babel again worked hard. But with those guys, you kind of want Kearney pushing up and supporting them. And you know, our best game of the season, the Brighton game at home in the second half, the only good 45 minutes of the season in my mind, really. Kearney was pushing up and supporting those guys and giving them a bit more of a platform to you know, something to run against and the ability to actually create some chances. Otherwise, they can do what they want up top, but if no one's kind of pushing and supporting them from midfield, they get isolated so quickly.
Does it not rely more on fullbacks, this kind of system as well? And the fullbacks we've got at the moment just aren't. You know, obviously it was a different level, but in the Championship we had Scott Malone, who loved getting forwards for the first year. We had Fredericks, who obviously was a winger and is now a fullback. So compared to that, you know, obviously they were playing in a four, but the fullbacks we've got at the moment is, you know, arguably the weakest links in the team. They're not getting forward enough, and I think they're not getting forward intelligently enough either. Like, some of the runs they're making, they never underlap, always overlap, always out wide. And it's just simple things like that, which you just see better fullbacks do. And yeah, they might make themselves available, but Christie's got one trick and he comes inside every single time. And yeah, so my biggest problem with the five at the back, going back to the original question, is that we haven't got the fullbacks to implement it.
I mean, I personally thought Christie didn't have a bad first half at all. He got himself into dangerous areas. He was always an outlet. Yes, his final ball was lacking. And defensively, you know, he made it difficult for, I think it's Firmino, to operate down that respective channel. And he was really, really putting the muscle in him as well. And that was quite refreshing to see from someone like Christie, who just kind of, you know, fades out of, you know, proceedings as the game goes on. And that kind of happened in the second half. But I agree with what Guy's saying. We haven't got the legs and we haven't got the metal and the brawn defensively, especially along the channels, to actually cope in the Premier League. And we just get picked apart. And Hollibas and Firmino in particular, as well as De La Feia, they just had fun and they ripped us to absolute shreds.
But if you look at their goals, all the goals came through the middle. You know, the first goal was like a run through in the middle from Decore. Second goal was a great strike from a corner. Third goal was a long ball flick on through the middle, cut across, goal. And the third goal was, again, like long ball, flick on, out wide, cross. You know, like, that's just basic, isn't it?
Well, are you slightly concerned that if the goals you're conceding are that simple, if things stay as they are, you will still be conceding that kind of goal in the Championship next year?
I think for me, defence is an area that definitely needs an overhaul. I think Alfie Mawson's the only guy who's come out of this season with any kind of positivity, really.
What, and is that because he's been injured? Yeah, he hasn't been able to play.
He's hardly played.
When he has played, he's been okay. But I think, considering Ream was our player of the season last year, he's been really, really poor Odoi has continued to be Dennis Odoi, and you just get punished more in the Premier League. Le Marchand has, for me, dropped off a bit of a cliff. He had an absolute shocker against Watford.
Yeah.
Like, it's individual mistakes that cost us those two goals. However, in defence of those guys, you know, if they're every other week they're switching between a back four and a back five, every other week it's a different combination. You know, when we're looking at the third and fourth goal, they're just running around like headless chickens. They're not working as a team. They don't know where they're meant to stand. And all of them are kind of caught ball watching.
Yeah, and you mentioned that defensive errors. So 29 goals out of the 75 approximately we've conceded have been down to defensive errors.
Yeah.
So that's nearly like 40% of our goals are in theory preventable. That's absolutely insane. How are you supposed to maintain any kind of, you know, survival bid with that those kind of numbers? It's ludicrous. And like, so for all the talk of the players not being good enough and wrong systems and wrong managers, blah, 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 if you're making that many mistakes, of course you're going to struggle. There's nothing you can do about that. There's nothing a manager can do. Unless, yeah, I don't know. It's just rubbish, really.
No, yeah, exactly right. I mean, we thought Scott Parker was going to come in and solidify things a lot more and maybe put a little bit more wind in our sails. But as you rightly said, it doesn't matter who's actually in the dugout. It's just got an absolutely awful team to work with.
That said, whoever's in the dugout next season is going to have to make these decisions. We've talked a lot about the areas in which Scott Parker did get it wrong against Watford. This, for him, is kind of a protracted job interview. Right, we've discussed this a few times. He is on trial for a job that he does want. Do you think on this kind of showing he deserves it?
I think it kind of hinges on the next couple of games, actually. Now that the pressure's kind of been lifted with relegation, it's now time for him to experiment with the squad. You know, has he actually got the thought process to work out a strategy that's going to be sustainable in the Championship for us? Who is he going to be implementing? Who's, you know, which players is he going to be fielding week in, week out? And I think that comes down to, continuity week in, week out as it goes on as well. And just be bold and brave. I mean, we've tried that in survival, but it was inevitable we were going to be facing the drop and the chop. So, yeah, I think his job kind of hinges, and it's critical that he gets a run in the next couple of games if he's going to be in the dugout next season.
Yeah, and to be honest, I don't know. I don't really care about his job personally.
don't seem to care about very much.
No, but you'll see where I'm going with this. Yeah. You know, it's not so much about him. It's about our club going forward, and we need to have, even though there's a summer break, we need to have some momentum going forward. We're going to have a too big a hangover for next season unless we just win a game. You need to remember what it's like to win. You know, we saw it with West Brom at the end of the last year. What did they win? Four out of the last five games? Something like that. And they started well this year, and they're fourth, in the playoffs, basically. Whereas Sunderland, the year before, went down with a whimper, fewer points than we've got now. And then back-to-back relegations. Villa went down with a whimper, struggled in the season after. Going down does affect how you start the next season. And if you carry on losing and losing, there's just no way you can... It's a hard habit to break, you know, and I really think we just need to win one of our remaining games.
Do you think that could happen, though, that the performances could be lifted because that pressure of trying to stay up is gone? And actually, precisely because it doesn't matter, precisely because there is nothing to play for, the players might play with a sort of added spring in their step.
Express yourself and prove to us why you should stay at the club next season if you're willing to, you know. That's all a player needs to take onto the pitch in the next few games is play for yourself, not necessarily the club at the moment because it's destined for the drop. We're already there. It's all down to professionality now. It's giving the best you've got, even though it doesn't actually mean anything. You know, I agree we need maybe a win and at least a draw in our next five games before we actually are faced with the inevitability of Championship football.
I think he's had his free hits. He had definitely some tough fixtures, Parker, but now the ones coming up are the ones, you know, theoretically you could see as winnable. I think in a strange way, you know, maybe we've got more to play for than an Everton or a Bournemouth at this point.
Think so? More than Everton?
I mean, what, Everton, they're kind of going for that seventh position.
Quite big, right? That seventh spot.
Bournemouth are on horror run, though.
Bournemouth are on a horror run.
They're in terrible form.
But
not as bad as losing 10 in a row like us, but
yeah, I mean a club like Bournemouth, they've got nothing to play. At least we've got, you know, we need to start turning things around so that we can hit the ground running next season. I think to me, you know, obviously the getting some of the results is important. Starting to get a bit of forward momentum is important. At this point, I don't care whether players are playing well because they want the club to do well or they're just doing it to put themselves in the shop window. You know, if that's what motivates them, go for it. I think it's just about getting some of those results and thinking a bit about how we want to play as well. Move back to that 4-3-3. Start to control games again because that's what we want to do in the Championship.
And it is Championship football next season. Coming up, we'll be discussing whether this relegation was the worst ever.
This is Love Sport.
London calling, Fulham calling. You're here with us on the Fulham Fan Show. It's me, Johnny Burrow, and Cam Ramsey, Guy Barlow, and George Singer of Fulhamish. And it's a big and depressing question, gents. Is the Fulham relegation this season the worst relegation of all time?
No. Well, I put this in the running order, shall we say, because I've seen it debated elsewhere. And because I don't think... I think we're going to have a healthy debate here, because I'm going to say that it probably is very well up there. I'm ignoring points tally, yeah? You need to think about expectation and the manner in which we came up and, you know, the three managers and just everything, the money we spent. It's been truly embarrassing. And the amount of goals we conceded, that there have been so many banter assets to it, which, you know, the Vice article was happy to point out, which are hilarious.
Invisible radiators.
Yeah, which is very funny. But, you know, if... I guess you either laugh or you cry. And if you were to cry about it, there is a lot to cry about. And for that reason, you know, it's not like with Huddersfield, who were punching above our weight last year and have now, you know, just the players are just not quite good enough, so they're going back down to the division they probably belong. No. We've got the players and we've embarrassed ourselves.
I think that point about expectation and money spent is really interesting. I'm going to come onto that in just a moment. I'm going to preface that with some stats from the Derby record-breaking season, which I think is widely recognised as the worst of all time, at least in England. I'm not going to go into all of the gritty, horrible details of that campaign, but I will say they finished 20th in the Premier League. They were relegated on the 29th of March, and their top scorer in the Premier League was Kenny Miller with a mighty 4. That said, everyone expected them to go down. And the point you're making, guys, you spent over 100 million quid. You had Sessegnon, this highly rated English talent, who some were talking about as a World Cup prospect. Mitrovic, who you knew was going to score you goals. And yet still here we are.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, like, that Derby team was awful, you know. And they, you know, they scored the fewest amounts of goals in top flight history, I believe, let alone Premier League history. But just because they're the worst team doesn't mean it was the worst relegation. You know, there are ways to get... There's more than one way to get relegated. And the way we've got relegated has been truly abysmal.
Can I add another one into the hat? When Sheffield United got relegated?
What, when West Ham had behaved perhaps ambiguously with their signing of Carlos Tevez?
A little bit. And then he scored the goal to keep them up. And clearly, you know, they're not the worst team to ever get relegated, but it's certainly for years and years, you know, the club were clearly kind of really still kind of bitter and disappointed about it. And as a fan, you're always going to get depressed by relegation. But if another club essentially cheats to, you know, get that final spot and knock you down, it's going to be awful. So I think there's a, you know, there's an argument that that's one of the worst as well.
Well, it's always Sunderland's as well. You know, a shining light to the north. Massive club, massive following, very avid, ardent fans, and their relegation to the Championship obviously sounded the relegation to League One as well. So
yeah, and the same happened to Sheffield United.
Well, of course, yeah, so it's just a complete implosion, really, wasn't it?
Sunderland were always on the brink of getting relegated, though, you know?
That's like, true.
Yeah, true. So that's another point.
That is true. With Fulham, if we look at those examples, I should just note, by the way, we've had a big, big goal for Ajax. It's an equaliser. Ronaldo scored in the last minute of the first half to put Juve 1-0 up. David Neres has scored just in the first minute of the second half to make it 1-1. Ajax still very much in this tie. Talking about these relegations, we've had Sheffield United cited, we've had Sunderland cited, both teams who got relegated to the Championship and then dropped down again into League One. Is that something you worry about as Fulham fans?
Not so. Compared to the last time we went down, I think we're actually genuinely in a really, really good place. from what we've heard, I think there's an article in the Times about it, from what we've heard, with all the signings that we've made recently, we've put loads of relegation clauses in to reduce wages. We haven't done any kind of buyout clauses or anything like that, so other teams can poach them on the cheap. And all the players that we've got, so your Alfie Mawson, your Mitrovic, tying Cesc down to a deal, you know, they're all young players. They're all still on the upwards trajectory. They're all, easy for me to say, none of them are going to, you know, drop in value. They're all going to go up in value. So, yeah, we've spent 100 million. But to me, although obviously in the short term it's been a bit of a waste of money, it's more of an investment. You know, it's money we can reclaim back. We're not going to get in the same financial issues that we've seen with the Sunderland, with another one to chuck in, Portsmouth. You know how difficult they had things with their relegation. You know, we're certainly not in that position. I think it's going to be a really big summer as we transition, move some of these players on, keep some of them, build more of a balanced team around some big names and some other kind of workhorses we're going to need. It's going to be tough, but I certainly don't see any risk. I'm going to wish I never said this now. I don't see any risk of a double dip, as it were.
Double dip.
That's what they call it, isn't it?
It can be now. You coined it.
Sounds terribly euphemistic. But anyway, we'll move on quickly.
Well, and it's also like the year contract extension clauses that they have for, you know, critical players that we could use in the Championship, like Johansson. I mean, buttoning those kind of players down when they know exactly what to expect and the pressures and the strains that come with the division, it's kind of imperative that we make sure that those guys stay, just for the pure fact that they're going to be such predominant figures next season.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about the last relegation we had, but this one, as relegations go, as you said, George, like, yeah, I don't think we are in any danger of dropping down to League One. We are, you know, compared to other teams like Sunderland, and we all saw from the documentary that what a state they were in, like, financially. And
but the dinner ladies were very friendly.
They were very nice, yeah. But I guess the point I'm making is that, you know, we have got the Khans, and in the statement they released after the Watford game, I don't know, we should be very grateful for them, I guess.
You're confident that you should be grateful for them, even in the context of all the protests, the hashtag Stop the Greed. You're still broadly grateful for the presence of the Khans at your club.
Certainly, Shahid, and I think we all really respected the message that he came out. And it's so common, you get the big wealthy owners who, you know, get interested, pump loads of money in, get relegated, and lose interest and want to, you know, recoup the losses. I mean, Tony Fernandez is the first name that comes to mind when you think of that. And for him to immediately come out with that statement, not only say that he's still interested, but also, you know, continuing the thing about this isn't his club, this is our club, you know, it's the fans' club, he wants to right by the fans. I thought that was the, like he's done so many times before, that was the perfect message to send at the perfect time.
Mm. And he didn't necessarily cite anything about the ticket protests at all, and, you know, addressing those the prices next season, but I totally agree. I mean, it was needed. So soon after that game as well. I mean, it wouldn't have had the same effect if he waited a week to release that statement. Basically, the fans needed to be, you know, addressed, and the point needed to be reaffirmed that he's still fully committed to the club. And, you know, in terms of the investment he actually pumps in, it's a real godsend to us that we have someone like him.
Do you think this relegation could be a sort of blessing in disguise, in the sense that if Fulham come up again, let's say in the next few years, Khan will have had this experience and he might approach it in a different way, be a little less naive, be a little more careful and a little more thoughtful about how he approaches promotion to the top flight?
Definitely. I guess the biggest thing about that is that it's so hard to bounce back straight away from the Championship, you know. Will he lose interest to it if we have to spend, say, another 4 years in the Championship? No one wants another 4 years in the Championship. We probably can't afford it. You know, that there are... So, but yeah, overall, Burnley went down after 1 year under Sean Dyche in 2010, I believe. Maybe not under Sean Dyche, but Kevin McDonald played for that team, and then they came straight back up and have been in the Premier League ever since. So they're one of those teams who have shown that if you can bounce back, you can learn from your mistakes, and you can, you know, push on and solidify as a lower mid-table Premier League team like we aspire to be.
I think, yeah, interestingly, when we went down in 13-14, it was the complete opposite in that for a good kind of couple of seasons, Alfayed was clearly thinking about selling. He hadn't invested at all. And you know, as soon as Khan came in, he didn't want to make any sweeping changes, didn't give that immediate investment, which the club really needed. And I don't really blame him for that. You know, he's come into a brand new sport. He doesn't quite know. We run out of time. Next time we come back, we spend 100 million and try and buy a whole new squad. And clearly the answer is somewhere in the middle. So hopefully, you know, next time, hopefully when we do go up in a season or two, fingers crossed, you know, he can do it in a bit more of a structured and measured way.
And partly because of all that money spent, this was a very different relegation, both in practice and in feeling, to the last one in the 13-14 season. And coming up, we'll be comparing the two. Which was your favourite? What?
This is Love Sport.
You are listening to the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. And it's time to talk about David Neres. He scored a massive goal tonight for Ajax, made it 1-1 against Real Madrid, scoring just after the half-time finished. And it's not the first time he's been in the headlines this season, because he spoke publicly about how his relationship with his girlfriend began. And roughly what he said was, I found her on Instagram, which is a slightly troubling choice of words, but we'll count it down to translation, and sent her a message reportedly simply saying, I am David Neres, come to me. And that was enough for a first date. Are we impressed? Are we offended? Yeah. Are we shocked? Are we jealous?
Scoring on every single front. Really, come on, let's face it. Look, absolute audacity of a bloke. But if he can do that, if he can score on the pitch, and certainly do it on social media in such a, you know, a bold way, all fairness to the bloke.
What I like to think is, how many times has he tried that line?
Is it like spam? Do you reckon he sends
like
a million messages?
It's just a 1% hit rate. I'm sure there's so many times he's tried it.
I wonder how many people...
being like, who the hell is... Yeah,
to be fair, she's a worldie, though.
And of course she is.
Yeah. She's an absolute worldie, so... And he's only, like, what, 5'6" or something?
Yeah, he's very good at football, but I'm sure she's with him for his personality, to be fair. But are you impressed by the brazenness of this attempt?
I don't know. No, it's not really for me. Bit too arrogant, I'd say.
Bit too arrogant. You're a modest man, Guy Barlow. Cam, you're impressed.
Tried it plenty of time.
Any response?
No.
Stay away from me. I'm calling the police. And
basically, yeah.
And your current girlfriend is not too happy about those attempts.
If you're listening tonight, yeah, sorry.
And George?
I mean, you've got to admire his confidence.
That's one way of putting it, yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
I was outraged.
I wouldn't do it.
I was outraged, I'll be honest. I think it's so depressing. It takes the whole dating app thing to a whole extreme, where you see someone, and as you point out, Cam, she's a very attractive lady, but you see someone on Instagram and just decide that you want to date with them, and then you have the sheer arrogance and, I suppose, appeal to be able to pull it off. Maybe I'm jealous.
But
maybe that's what
I'm
saying.
It's not even Tinder, though, is it?
No, exactly.
It's Instagram. Come on.
Staggering. Yeah. Show some respect. Post pictures of your lunch like everybody else. Right to Fulham and to more important things. We will be updating you, by the way, on all things, both Juventus and David Neres's relationship throughout the course of the show. Not the first relegation that Fulham have had in the last 10 years. There's one this year. There was also one in the 13-14 season. But for your money, gents, which was worse?
Well, do you think we should do a quick poll? Like, because just to set the mood, what do you think, George?
I think it's a really depressing question. but 13-14 was worse.
Okay.
That makes two of us, yeah.
Oh, really? Okay, so that's good that it's fallen quite organically, because I think this is worse. Because 13-14, we won way more games. We had an aging squad. There was hope right until the end, and there was a sense that, you know, we were arrogant about whether we thought we would bounce back, but we thought we did. We thought we would just bounce back straight away. We thought we'd have a good old time in the Championship, bounce straight back, and we'd be back in the Premier League where we belong. Well, that's certainly how I felt, but this time there was so much more promise. The playoff final was, you know, one of the best days of my life, and that was just, yeah. And we had an amazing year last year, and we were riding the crest of a wave, and we came crashing down this year. And with the lack of fight we've shown this year, it's just such a whimper, and it's just way more depressing. And I know we talk about the inevitability, meaning now that it's happened, we're relieved, but that inevitability is just, you know, soul destroying. It sucks life out of you, doesn't it? I've not enjoyed football for like 6 months because of what's happened. Whereas last time I was fine.
It was more, this one certainly more immediate disappointment. Obviously, previously with 13-14, it had been coming for a couple of years. We'd been slowly getting worse, and it felt like over time it was more and more likely. I think for me, so I guess like a lot of Fulham fans out there, you know, started supporting the club in the Premier League and never, you know, even thought of a concept of supporting a team that's not in the Premier League. You know, what how the hell do you actually follow your team? You know, what is this championship? Like, what kind of league is it? And now we've been through it and seen how, honestly, the championship's the best league in the world. It's wicked. And I think, like we said earlier, I remember last time we went down, there was a thing going around Fulham fans saying, you know, what will you miss about the Premier League? And at the time, I was like, oh, I'm really going to miss Match of the Day. And actually, coming back, you know, just like we said before, some of the terrible journalism there is in the Premier League of... Robbie Savage is probably one of my least favourite.
Yeah.
Doesn't have a clue what he's talking about. And that's because, you know, he's trying to follow all the big teams, and then, you know, Fulham is a add-on, like, five-minute conversation at the end of a show, and he doesn't know what he's talking about. But in the Championship, when you go further down, you've got journalists who actually know what they're talking about. You've got podcasts out there who actually know what they're talking about and can give you interesting insight. And you don't have, you know, these journalists out there who are just creating stories or just pushing stuff out there just to create news stories and just to print rubbish, basically. You get, you know, the only people who care and follow about it are the people watching, and they're the ones who actually know what they're talking about. So that's stuff I'm going to look forward to.
Definitely. I mean, for me, 13-14 hurt because it drew a line in the sand of, you know, what was actually quite an accomplished 13 or so, you know, years in the top flight. It was coming for a while. Of course, there was a lack of investment and a lack of direction in the club. But, you know, after witnessing the Great Escape and the way that we dragged ourselves out of an absolute dogfight, at, you know, virtually the last kick of the game at Portsmouth as well, it was a real kick in the teeth for me as a fan, especially a young, impressionable fan at the time. And I agree with George. I mean, you know, he didn't necessarily know what the Championship was about. It just seemed like a little bit of a tin pot division. Obviously, when we got there, we realised it was a totally different environment than kettle of fish. But, yeah, for me, it just seemed like an absolute fall from grace, and we plummeted, and we spent some really dire seasons the first couple of years in the Championship, and it just seemed like there was no coming back for us, really.
I totally agree with that whole unknown quantity thing. You know, the Premier League was all I'd ever known as a Fulham fan as well, which did make it disappointing. But then, in a morbid way, it made the Championship exciting. Mm. And I was looking forward to winning some games and seeing more grounds and things. But, and equally now that we know both well, you know, we know what the Championship's like, we know what the Premier League's like. And again, I'm going to say it again, it's just such a missed opportunity this year in the Premier League in so many ways, and including from ticket pricing to, you know, not winning enough games and going straight back down. Everything about it is just wasted, and it just feels like a wasted year, way more than the 13 years, like you said, Cam. That was not a wasted 13 years. That was great fun.
Very true.
Well, the way of getting some kind of use, some kind of positive out of this season is to make the most of the rest of the year. So coming up, we'll be discussing what we want from the rest of the season and where we need to strengthen ahead of the Championship.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. Quick score updates for you from the Champions League. It's Ajax 1, Juventus 1 in Holland. A big goal from David Neres. Apparently he messaged the Juventus back four on Instagram and they said, yeah, go on, score a goal. And it's Barcelona 1, United 0 at Old Trafford. And in the Championship, of course, with a London focus here on Love Sport Radio, some big goals. It's Brentford 2, Ipswich 0, Hull 1, Wigan 1, Millwall 0, QPR 0. It's a big game for both of those teams. And the shock of the night, really, Reading are still 1-0 up away at league leaders Norwich. Gents, this is the division that Fulham will be in next season. And to get ready for it, how should the next bit of this season be treated?
Play with some kind of pride, even though I've said that dignity and pride has already kind of evaporated this season. You have got to try and find some foundation for next season in some sort of, you know, some sort of form. You can't go out in the next couple of games just crestfallen, you know, dejected, because we've already had that this season. Go out and have fun and experiment and express yourselves.
I really hope, just going to quickly say, I really hope Reading aren't in the division. So this result at Norwich is really, really annoying me. It's the worst away ground of the country.
Why do you hate the Majeski so much?
Because you have to get a bus there from a terrible...
But it doesn't take very long. I've done that journey. It's not that bad.
Yeah, from a terrible town, which is Reading.
I'll second that.
And finally, they have their number 12 as the fans. So the number 12 is literally the 12th man.
Okay, that is a little bit vomiting.
That happens on the team sheet, on the official team sheet.
No, they don't. Yeah,
on the official team sheet, it says 12th man, the fans.
Okay, okay,
yeah,
now you've sold me.
So I hate Reading. But yeah. We'll talk about positives and negatives. Of the,
I just thought he was going to carry on then.
No, talk about positives and negatives of the Championship. One of the negatives is Reading away.
Well, but you know you don't have to go, Guy. No one's making you.
It's also very close. You kind of, it's easy.
Rude
so,
not to. Yeah. Rude not to.
But yeah, it's not even that. It's geographically close, but it takes so long to get to.
All right, we're moving on from Reading. We've established.
Come on, Norwich.
None
Come on, Norwich.
Of you like Reading. Come on, Norwich.
Another reason to hate them.
Now, in terms of preparation for the Championship, whether or not Reading are in it, that is a different question. Is there a case to only play players who are going to be featuring for the club next season for the rest of the Premier League?
Of course there's a case, yeah. It gives them a chance to actually get used to some kind of blueprint which may be implemented this next season. And we've already spoken about it. I'd like to see... give us Stephen Sessing on the pitch, lads. Come on. You know, Matt O'Reilly. I mean, even Marlon Fossey coming back into fitness as well. These are lads that can make the step up and, actually improve and showcase exactly what they're about in the Championship next season. There's no reason why they can't. I mean, Ryan Sessegnon did, so... Yeah.
You've just got to find the right balance, right? Because if you put someone like Stephen Sessegnon against, I don't know, who big have we got coming up? Well, even if you put him against someone like, I don't know, Richarlison, he's going to rip him to shreds. That's not going to do his confidence any good. So you just need to find a way of gently bedding them in, giving them some experience. Because Premier League experience, that's going to be a huge plus for these young guys.
But even with someone like Stephen Sessegnon, it's not like he's just a local academy player that hasn't actually featured at, you know, a high octane level of the game. He's also an under-17 World Cup winner. He knows, you know, to an extent what actual pressure is, especially coming from behind against a very talented Spain equivalent. So he's certainly got a pedigree and a calibre behind him. I just want to see that actually come to prominence in this couple of games.
Yeah,
but there also might be all sorts of reasons why we have to play loan players, like fees and things. We might get fined and like boring stuff like that. But that is one of the things you always see at this stage, is like, don't play someone who's not here next year, you know. But I think something we did wrong last time under McGath was we chucked in all these young players a bit too early. One of the many things we did wrong, George. You're looking at me quite funny there. But yeah, like we did like bed in like and Patrick Roberts springs to mind, and arguably we didn't see him reach his full potential. So I got what you mean about the pressure thing. There is no pressure on us now because we've been relegated. But as you said, I'm not sure it's going to do him any harm getting ripped up by Richarlison.
I think the other thing, aside from players, so system, like I just want us to go back to the 4-3-3.
Yeah,
the glory days of the 4-3-3, and just, you know, back when we had like 60-70% possession, we'd control teams, we'd, you know, starve the opposition of the ball. We need to start thinking towards that style of football again, and we did it at the start of the season. You know, against Crystal Palace, we dominated the ball. Against all these other teams, we dominated the ball. And since we've had that Italian chap who looked after us for a little bit, we've lost all that. And I think that's the key in the Championship. And it makes sense to start drilling the players in that kind of way, because I think that's our best route of getting out of the Championship.
Is there also a case for the rest of this season for explicitly deciding to play players who might not be here next year in an attempt to convince them to stick around? For example, start Mitrovic every game. Try and get him as many goals as possible. Remind him how loved he is and try and convince him that actually, just give us one season in the Championship and see what you can do.
Well, there's also that, but there's also the factor that, you know, if they are going to leave in the summer anyway, give them these next five games to go out and truly express themselves, maybe bag a couple of goals along the way and a few assists and just bolster your transfer fee, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
You know, a player like Mitrovic, when he's firing on all cylinders and exactly what he brings to the final third, you can get at least 50 million out of him in this current market. And if that was to happen, I would not be adverse to, you know, seeing him go through the exit door.
And there are cheers. There are cheers in the studio as I point out the screen, because it is Norwich 1, Reading 1. Apparently, these guys aren't that keen on Reading. I don't.
Who knew?
Can't remember anyone mentioning that. But of course, Fulham don't have to play Reading next. Next up, it is Everton, and in just a moment, we will be getting the Everton opposition view ahead of that game from Paul McParlin, who's a senior writer at These Footy Times, and of course, an Everton fanatic.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This is Love Sport.
There is an explosive atmosphere here in the Love Sport Radio studio for the Fulham Fan Show, because Norwich have only gone and got another one. It's Norwich 2, Reading 1, and a beautiful goal at that.
Wonderful. Get out of the Championship now, you boring club.
Right, well, I hope there are no Reading fans listening.
No, he might be talking about Norwich there.
They're not a boring club.
I think they are.
But we are turning our attentions towards Everton, who are the next opponents for Fulham. And I'm delighted to say that we're joined on the line by Paul McParlin, who's a senior writer for These Footy Times and, of course, an Everton fan. Evening, Paul. Thanks ever so much for joining us. Everton have been fantastic in the last couple of weeks. Tore West Ham apart, taught Arsenal a lesson. Are you confident coming up on this Fulham match?
I think I certainly am, Johnny. The recent run form and the recent run results we put together has been so encouraging compared to the depths of despair we were suffering after the Millwall Cup defeat in February. Things have just changed massively.
I'm looking back at previous Fulham Everton games over the years. We had a brilliant record at home against you until I think you beat us in a relegation year. And then, but you always beat us at Goodison Park. So
yeah, that's true. I mean, at the start of the season, I was at the game, you know, when we beat you 3-0, and it kind of summed the Fulham season to me, that because you played some great attacking football. Sessegnon missed a really good opportunity when it was 0-0, but defensively, you know, you just weren't that organised.
Yeah, taking a look at the squad and who's done well this season, one player that really stood out for me is Gylfi Sigurdsson. So obviously, you know, you signed him for a lot of money from Swansea. You had that kind of big transfer window, spent a lot of money, and, you know, struggled to kind of blend them all in together. What's happened differently to Sigurdsson this year? You know, why is he suddenly starting to bang the goals in again?
I think mainly because they're playing him in his correct position. So he's playing just behind the main striker, behind just Van Calvert-Lewin at the moment. He's finding more space to operate, so he's not often getting picked up by defenders. Whereas last year, he was either pushed too far forward or pushed out onto the wing, and we really didn't get the best of him. But this season, you know, most Everton moves are now going through him. He's linking up the build-up from the back with the forwards really well. And it's just generally helped the flow of the team, because one thing about Sigurdsson is if you give him the ball, he doesn't give it away. He's very good at keeping possession. And he sees passes that maybe other players in the team just don't see as well. So, yeah, his form's been quite influential this season, as you said.
Paul, talking about strikers, it's been a problem position for Marco Silva this season. Nominally seemed to be promised goals by Cenk Tosun. He's looked fairly hopeless. Do you think Dominic Calvert-Lewin is good enough to lead that line for Everton long term?
Well, you have to remember, Calvert-Lewin, he's only 22. So, you know, I think most Everton supporters are prepared to give him a chance to make see if he can make that impact. Obviously, he's not the finished article. Obviously, he's not a natural goal scorer as yet. But the way he played against Arsenal in the last game, the way he played against West Ham and Chelsea in the previous games, he can lead the line well. And what he's done particularly effectively is when Everton needs a long ball out of defence, someone's go chasing after it to hold the play up. He's done that superbly this season, so I'm not totally convinced he will be the first name on the sheet next season. I do think we need another experienced striker, maybe someone he can play with and learn with. But at the moment, he's probably, out of all the people who tried there this season, he's been the best player so far, I'd say.
Straying away from offensive elements at the moment. Obviously, Fulham have shipped a absolute catalogue of goals this season, and we've looked at shaky defensively along the flanks for us. But Everton defensively, for me, one player that has actually stood out and has really impressed me after a pretty dismal start to life at Goodison Park is actually Michael Keane, and sat alongside Kurt Zouma, it looks like they're, and Phil Jagielka periodically, it looks like they're actually forming a very good partnership. I mean, obviously from an Everton fan's perspective, how promising and positive is it to see that kind of connection forming between those two players in particular?
Yeah, it's a very positive relationship between those two at the moment. I think when we bought Yerry Mina during the summer, I think most people thought he would be the main centre-half rather than Kurt Zouma. But Zouma has come on tremendously, scored a really good goal as well against West Ham in the away fixture a fortnight or so ago. But him and Michael Keane have formed a really, really good partnership. And I think one of the issues for Everton now is to make sure that during the summer they get both Kurt Zouma signed up on a permanent deal, and they also get Andre Gomes signed up on a permanent deal. But you mentioned about Michael Keane. I think most Everton fans would probably say he's been our most improved player this season, because last season he struggled. He just didn't look worth the transfer fee. But this season, he's won more header clearances than anyone else in the Premier League at the moment. So he's really, really come on well.
I think from a slightly external point of view, it's been quite interesting watching Marco Silva's tenure, because obviously, you know, it seems that every other week, you know, he goes from being a hero and being, you know, the saviour and the future of football, and then a week later everyone decides actually he doesn't really know what he's doing. You know, whole fans love him, Watford fans hate him. From the Everton fan base point of view, what are the feelings like towards Marco? Does it feel like he's kind of long term, he's going to stick at the club and build? You know, what are the general thoughts with him?
Yeah, I mean, he's had quite a mixed season, as you've indicated. Certainly after the cup defeat against Millwall, you know, he a lot of people were sort of pushing that maybe it's time for the club to make a change. However, all the way through, he's been playing a style of football that, compared to what we suffered under Sam Allardyce, has gladdened the hearts of most of the supporters. He's got a very young team together there now. I think we've got six players under the age of 22 who are getting regular first-team appearances for the side as well, which is really positive. And I think finally, after a few inconsistencies, we're starting to see the style that he wants to play, that he's getting the ball forward much more quickly. The wingers, Bernard and Richarlison in particular, are involved in all our best attacking movements. So I think most people at this stage now would definitely give him another season, maybe two, because I think, as Fulham have found out this season, you cannot just constantly keep changing the manager and expect things to change for the better. So my view would be, at the moment, he's definitely going to be there for another one, two, three seasons.
You mentioned getting Andre Gomes and Kurt Zouma in for next year. I mean, it's a bit of a shame, isn't it, that like two of your better players, we were talking about this off air, we'd say Idrissa Gueye is probably our favourite Everton player, or perhaps the best, but certainly two of the best are on loan. Like, what's the indication from your owners? Like, do you reckon you'll splash again this summer? Because you obviously spent 50 million on Sigurdsson, 50 million on Richarlison. You're going to have to spend that and more to get them to this summer.
Yeah, well, I think that they're going to have to do that. I think Everton also have got quite a few players out on loan at the moment, like Yannick Bolasie, Mo Besic is out on loan. We've got several players out on loan. We've got people like Theo Walcott and Cheng Tosin, who just don't think we've got a future at the club. So I would suggest that with a good summer clear out, some additional funds should be generated from that. And I think definitely, if the club is serious about making any attempts to get anywhere near the top six next season, Gomez and Zuma have to be bought, and that's basically the end of the discussion.
Of course, Gomez might get poached by Spurs. In terms of the Fulham lineup, Paul, is there anyone there who worries you from an Everton perspective?
Well, you probably know who I'm going to say, Mitrovic. I've always been hugely impressed with Mitrovic.
He has been lethal. Sorry, the silence in the studio there, Paul, was one of sorrow because the guys, for whatever reason, hate Reading, and Reading have just grabbed a very dramatic last-minute equaliser.
Would you take Mitrovic at Fulham next year? At Everton next year, even?
Yeah, I was quite impressed with what is it, Newcastle. I was quite surprised when Newcastle decided to let him go to Fulham. He's shown he can score goals in the Premiership for struggling sides, i.e. both in Newcastle and with Fulham. So, yeah, I'd be quite happy to have Mitrovic at Everton. And I think certainly Dominic Calvert-Lewin could certainly learn a few of the dark arts of being a forward from him as well.
I think just going back, obviously, thinking about manager point of view, and you mentioned Big Sam there. I completely forgot he managed you.
He didn't.
Yeah. Well, obviously, you know, when you get a club like Fulham who are struggling defensively, and it seems to be the go-to from, you know, journalists and opposition fans, always go to, why don't you bring in someone like Big Sam? You know, he'll keep you up. What would you say to people like that? You know, is it worth getting someone like Big Sam in and playing that style of football if it means you can avoid relegation like you did?
From a Fulham perspective, I just don't think it'd be worth it. I think, you know, I heard some the fans saying before that, you know, that in some ways the Championship might not be as bad a deal as what they thought because it gives them a chance to regroup, get the team back together again, get them back on track. So if you're saying Adelaide would fall, I'd say definitely no. I think Adelaide's time is just gone. And I think any club that appoints him as a manager now is just a really, really backward step for the club and for the supporters and for the owners.
Now, I agree with you, Paul. And I've got to put you on the spot, I'm afraid. I need a score prediction from you. How do you think it's going to go, Fulham versus Everton?
Okay, well, I was quite close when you asked for the West Ham prediction the other week. I said it would be 2-1 and we won 2-0. I think at the moment, because I know Fulham haven't got that much to play for at the moment, but there's still a goal fest. But at the moment, with the run that we're on, I'd say 3-1 to Everton.
Okay, he's a confident man. Paul, lovely to speak to you. Thanks ever so much.
Come back to haunt me.
Paul McFarlane there, who is a senior writer at These Footy Times and also, of course, an Everton fan. Lovely speaking to him. Gents, I'm afraid that Everton, not that Everton goal, that Reading goal went in 90+7 minutes. 7 minutes of stoppage time.
Taste of their own medicine. Mm. You know, Mount Thomas Norwich have done that this year.
Yeah, true. Justice.
They scored 2 goals in injury time to beat someone this year at home, I remember. So, yeah, taste their own medicine.
Taste of their own medicine. Well, we've heard the Everton view of things, and coming up, it's time to chat about how Fulham should approach the game.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Guy Barlow, Cam Ramsey, and George Singer of the Fulhamish podcast. Gents, it's Everton up next for Fulham. Confident? Scared? How do you approach the game?
I'd probably rather be somewhere else. But
Reading away?
not anywhere but Reading away. I'd rather be at home to Everton than Reading away. But yeah, we've got some quite fond memories of Everton at home. Like I said on the phone to Paul just then, we got a really good record against them. I think the one time they did beat us at home was the last day of the season. Maybe that wasn't a relegation season, but either way, it was dead rubber and it didn't matter. I saw the club put out a flashback today, which turned out to be Louis Saha's last goal for the club was a penalty against Everton. Was it Brian McBride made his debut against Everton and came on and scored the winner? I want to say that was against Everton. But either way, yeah, I at home, Everton, it used to be 3 points every single time.
Yeah, but I think thinking objectively now, as I've said so many times this season, I really think we're going to struggle. the bit that concerns me and who we always do poorly against are the teams that are really direct and run straight at us, because our defence are awful. And if you run, if I've got the ball and dribble to LaMarchand, he's going to trip himself over. Like,
to be fair, he's playing with an invisible radiator. It's not easy,
it is,
George.
Yeah. It's true. That radiator, yeah. But yeah, and that's, we've struggled against Watford this season. We've struggled against Bournemouth this season, and we struggled against Everton this season. And I think we're going to struggle again. And I think one thing they've done really well is get more. They've clearly tried to get a lot more pace in the team, because that was their real issue a couple of seasons ago, where they had, you know, Sigurdsson, they had Rooney, you know, they had these really kind of languid, slow midfielders who really struggled to kind of add any dynamism to the play. And now they've got full of, you know, young, quick, fast attacking players who are going to dribble right at us, and that's really the kind of opposition we struggle against.
Yeah, and if you look at how they played against West Ham, it was very much about Bernard and Richarlison, about pace, getting at them, giving them something to worry about, getting the defenders on the back foot. And that, as you say, George, is where you're going to struggle. With that in mind, what kind of tactical changes can Scott Parker make to counteract that kind of Everton game plan?
Stick 11 men behind the ball, basically. That's the only viable way I can see him actually sorting it out. I mean, fullback wise, you just touched on him. Bernard and Richarlison are going to have a field day against Brian and Christie, respectively. They're so fragile, and although, as we've already touched on as well, that they, you know, goals actually come through the central positions through Sigurdsson as well. There's just a fluency about them which we won't be able to deal with. I don't believe, and you know, I'm not moved by this fixture at all. I'm merely going up there to have a couple of pints. And
so you're not moved by the fixture, and you're going to Liverpool.
Huh?
You're going despite the fact you're not interested in the game. Football out of football.
It's at Fulham.
Oh, it's at Fulham. I apologise.
Yeah, no.
It's a sellout as well.
It is a sellout.
I'm going in the hope there's going to be sunshine and an early Wetherspoons breakfast with my mates and a pint, basically.
Other breakfasts are available.
No, Wetherspoons breakfast.
What do you mean?
No, but I don't see any In terms of refortifying ourselves against Everton, I honestly don't
I've heard breakfasts are good for that.
I was just about to say, maybe you take the lads down to Wetherspoons beforehand, just get a bit of stodge from Sunday League style, you know.
Other eateries and pubs, of course, are available should you need stodge before any kind of football match.
I think, hopefully, that cliche comes true where, you know, you play better once you've been relegated. Sunderland did it, notably. West Brom did it last year. It sounds so pessimistic and so typical of our season, but I agree with George. I don't think we will do it. I don't think we will start playing that.
Would it be bittersweet if you did? Would there be an element of why did we do this earlier?
Yeah, definitely. Where was this beforehand when we needed it? You know, especially against a team like Everton, who are, you know, picking up the points, and as rightly said, I mean, they kind of counteracted Arsenal's football as well, and made it very difficult for them to operate. I mean, it just seems to be one of those, you know, reoccurring things, problems for us this season. It's not actually finding the goals when they should be coming. And if it was to happen at Craven Cottage, it's a 2-0, 3-0 win even for Fulham. You know, I'm just plucking numbers out of the sky right here. I'd be happy, but it would be kind of a wry cheer at the same time, because it would just hurt.
Yeah. I think from my side, I've slated Parker's tactics a few times, so I guess it's only right I put my neck out there a little bit. I think if we play with a back three, we're really going to struggle, especially considering they only play with one striker. If we pack the defence and leave the midfield ready to be overrun, that's what they're going to do. They've got really strong midfielders in, like, specifically, you know, Idrissa Gueye, who, you know, not dissimilar to Kante in some ways, where he runs around, he's so energetic, he's basically two midfielders himself. So for me, go back to the back four, go back to the 4-3-3 and try and wrestle control of the midfield. And where they're going to be strong is out wide. Richarlison is clearly their star man. And that's maybe where we want to think about playing Sessegnon. Yeah, maybe at a kind of winger role. But when Everton have the ball, they can drop back and support the fullbacks. Because I think our fullbacks have been really weak. But so many times, Christie has been the only wide outlet, and he's had to do that attacking role and that defending role. And that's a really challenging thing to do. If you've got someone else out there who you can partner with, you can overlap with, and you can both double up on a defender, double up on an opposition winger if needed, then that gives a bit more support, and that protects some of our weaker areas. So I think this is a great opportunity for Parker to show that he can adapt his tactics to the right opposition. I just hope that he does that and doesn't go with, again, the same system, that back three that we've seen lose the last two matches.
Yep.
Well, maybe you were saying if they do like to get it wide and put crosses in to that lone striker, Calvert-Lewin, he's very good at holding the ball up. I mean, on Sunday we saw him boss around Mustafi. I know that's not hard, but we saw him play very well and put himself about. So maybe an extra central defender in there might be, I don't know, might be all right.
We're talking a lot about how to negate Everton, which is obviously sensible because they will be favourites going into this game. But it is a home tie, and we should also be thinking about how Fulham can get at them. Beyond the obvious and Mitrovic, who do you think Fulham should be looking to utilise? Where can Everton be exploited?
Well, it's that connection that Mitro, Kearney, Sessegnon have from last season. I think this needs to be rekindled if we're going to find any fruition in the game, and giving them a little bit more of a free rein to get out and pull strings and work as a trio up, you know, in the final third. That's where we saw, you know, real dangerous phases last year, and, you know, some instances this season come to prominence and come to fruition. And if we're going to be hurting Everton, we need to be feeding Mitrovic, but we also need to be giving Sessegnon, Kearney the right to dictate in their areas of the pitch, basically.
Yeah, and I know George banged on about this, but I'm going to jump on the bandwagon. 4-3-3. I was just playing devil's advocate just then.
Okay.
with the whole three centre backs. I completely agree, you know. And what you're saying, Cam, like, yeah, 4-3-3 with the Kearney in the free role, whatever you want to call it. Two midfielders around him, yeah, linking with the front three. And you know what? I thought Aite played well. Against.
You say that with such a tone of surprise.
well, I mean, there are surprise faces around me, Johnny. Yeah, like, yeah. Yeah, I thought he actually did play well, and it's perhaps something we've missed this season. So he's a bit injury prone, isn't he? So it'd be annoying if he was still out. But if he was available, bring him back in as part of that front three, I reckon.
Yeah, I think when Tom Kearney plays well, Fulham play well. And I think one thing we should have done at the start, obviously we gave Kearney a long contract, we bought Seri in, we bought Anguissa in, and they just don't all fit together in the same way. And I think now's the time where we have to think, okay, who can we realistically keep going forward? And to me, Kearney seems like the sensible one.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's build a midfield around Kearney. Who behind Kearney works? Well, we've seen before, if you've got more of an anchor man and a box-to-box player, then that suits Kearney. So play Kearney in more of that free attacking role where he thrives, because he's not a defensive guy. And Giesa plays that box-to-box role perfectly. And then you've got a ready-made anchor man in Kevin McDonald.
Do you think Tom Kearney's staying? We saw interest in him from West Ham in the summer. Rumours of a £25-28 million bid. They were sniffing around again in January. Do you think that interest is still there? And if so, can you hold on to him?
I think, well, so he's about to be a dad pretty soon. So I don't think he'd want to move and uproot his family too far away. So I think
it's a London club, though. I mean, he could stay broadly the same neck of the woods.
I mean, the other clubs that are out there in London, I mean, West Ham obviously came out before, said they're interested, but they've gone in other directions. They bought players like Felipe Anderson, who's been superb. And, you know, could you imagine a team with Felipe Anderson and Tom Kearney, and it would be a bit of a disaster.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing. I think West Ham have bigger ambitions than Tom Kearney now. I think he's missed the boat. I think, yeah, they're too, or at least they want to be higher than he is, higher than his level.
Whether it's, you know, Championship or Premier League, we can offer TC, you know, real stability and assurance, and that's a given for a professional of his age now. He's 28, still fairly young as a playmaker, but in that respect, he's not necessarily getting any younger, and I don't see him getting into West Ham's first team. I don't see him getting into, you know, Crystal Palace's first team, whoever's been touted, so.
Yeah, and he's got 4 years left in his contract, as he, like you said, just about to come a dad. So it would have to be a lot of money to prize him away from us. One, would Fulham accept that? Would he want to go? And I don't think the other London clubs where he might go, yeah, I don't think he'd fit.
So if you can hold on to players like him, players like Sessegnon, you confident for the Championship?
I personally feel Sessegnon has it in him to stay. I don't think he'll leave us in the lurch. But if he was to leave, I wouldn't necessarily seek just a straight deal. I'd want a loan back clause in that as well. You know, I think he'd definitely take that, actually. You know, one more crack at the whip in the Championship. Say he signs a contract at Tottenham that he goes there the season afterwards. He's had a bit more experience in a very competitive division. I'll be all for that, personally.
Yeah. It sounds like it would suit all parties. It's full-time in the Champions League. Ajax 1, Juventus 1. The Dutch side still very much in that tie. Barcelona come away from Old Trafford with a 1-0 win and that all-important away goal. But United still very much in that as well. And unfortunately, it finished Norwich 2, Reading 2, gents, after a 97th-minute equaliser. But to more optimistic things, and it's that time in the show where I press you for your predictions for Fulham's next game. It's Everton coming up. George, kick us off. What are you saying?
Does it have to be optimistic?
No.
No. I thought the caller with a 3-1 Everton win is probably going to be right.
Okay, you're going with Paul McParlane and a 3-1 Everton win. Cam?
I don't think we'll score. I don't think we'll score. I don't think we'll see much of a difference in this, you know, week since relegation, but 2-0 Everton.
2-0 Everton, slightly more optimistic arguably. And Guy, give us a win.
I am going to give us a win, yeah. Because Everton have won 3 in a row. You know, this is exactly the kind of game Everton like to lose against a relegated terrible side. 1-0 Fulham.
1-0 Fulham. Optimism, and could it be 3 points and a positive look ahead to the Championship? Join us next week on the Fulham Fan Show.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.